So he says, according to this interpretation then, if it's written by Yispalel Moshe El Hashem, pronounced it more like Yispalel Moshe Al Hashem. Al Hashem. So that, again, even Moshe Rabbeinu spoke harshly to the Rabbeinu Shemayla. And now he gives, you know, this interpretation. Okay. Devei Rabbi Yanai, as we find in the school of Rabbi Yanai, Amre, they said Mehocha, they said from this Pasuk. Pasuk says, Vedi Zahav. Alright, you know where we find this Pasuk? Right at the beginning of Sefer Devarim. And if you'll take a look at Rashi's comment, for example, right at the very beginning. It's written, you know, Ela Hadvarim, Ashediba, Meshel, B'nai Yisrael, Be'ever Hayadein, right? These are the words which Moshe spoke to all of Israel on the other side of the Jordan. And then it's written by Midbar, by Rova, and so on and so forth. Molzub, Bein Porum, Bein Teufel, the Loven, Machatzeos, Medi Zahav. And it lists a series of places, some of them who have been mentioned in the Shabbos reading that we're going to be reading this week, Parsha Masei, you know, Matas and Masei. In the Masei, we speak about all kinds of places that the people of Israel traveled to during the time that they were going in the wilderness, from the time that they left Egypt until they came to the Arvos Moab, to the plains of Moab, you know, from which they could see Eretz Israel on the other side of the Jordan River. Okay, so some of the places are mentioned over there, but Vedi Zohar is nowhere mentioned in the Torah except for this place. And so therefore Rashi, for example, comments over there, not over here. He doesn't say anything here. But if you take a look at Rashi at the beginning of Sefer Devarim, you'll see that he says, I tried to find it throughout the entire Torah, he says, a place by the name of Dizahob, and I have not been able to find it. So that, therefore, the name has to be understood allegorically. And this is then what we have over here. This is the allegorical interpretation. In other words, you know, the extra special drash as to what Dizahav means. Okay? My Vedizahav. So what is the meaning of Vedizahav? So Amrei Devei Rabbi Yanai. So they said, the school of Rabbi Yanai said, Kach Amar Moshe Bnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is what Moshe said to the Rabbeinu Shalom. He said, Rabbeinu Shalom. Says Bishvil Kesev Zohav Sheishvatu Lahem LeYisrael Ad SheOmru Dai Hu Garam SheOsu LeSeidah. Says Rabbeinu Shleilam, because you gave so much silver and gold, Hishvatu means in this case, you know, that you gave them with shefa, as we would say. In other words, with abreita hand, you know, you gave exceedingly generously to the people of Israel. You gave them so much gold and silver until to such a quantity that they said, finally die. In other words, we can't take anymore. Okay? This is the reason why they made the eagle. This is the reason why they made the eagle. Of course, you'll ask, what is the connection? But the connection is, if the people of Israel had not had so much gold, they would not have been able to make a golden calf. So, if the people of Israel made a golden calf, then again, what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying to the Rabbeinu Shalom is, you Rabbeinu Shalom, you were a reason also, I mean, for the fact that they made the golden calf, because you were too generous to them. You know, it's like the father who spoils his children by giving them everything that their hearts desire and giving them everything that their hearts don't even ask for.
And then,
you know. But in the end, you know, you spoil the child, right?
Why it does bad.
Exactly. Amri Devei Rabbi Yanai, and they gave now a marshal, you know, a popular parable, an example. And what is the marshal? What is the proverb? It says, Einari nohe mitok kupo shel teben, el mitok kupo shel bosom. A lion does not begin to roar simply because he eats a basketful of straw. This is not going to make the lion roar. But why does he roar? El mitok kupo shel bosom. Give him a basketful full of flesh, then he starts to roar. In other words, if you give him a load of meat, you only increase his appetite for more meat and so on. And this is why, you know, he roars, because he wants more all the time and so on. So it's the same thing with the people of Israel. He gave them gold, and they didn't know what to do with the gold. So finally, what did they do? So they made an eagle as well. Omer Rabbi Yeshaya. Rabbi Yeshaya gave a different marshal. He says, Marshal Yodom, to compare it to the story of a man, Shehoyes Eloi Kora Kehusha Balasebor. He had a cow, and the cow was Kehushot, was skinny, and Ms. Balasebor was also a very, very bony cow. In other words, you know, it was a big cow, but the it had not enough food. All right. So what happened? So Hechilo Karshina. So he started in to give it Karshin. And Karshin is what we would call groipen in English. I mean, Mama Lush in English. Groipen, groipen. You ever heard of groipen?
No.
Hey, that's a cereal.
Oh.
Yeah, right. Fresh the grape on its own. Okay. Oh, it's right. Anyway, instead of feeding.
Is that where the grape comes from?
Right. Instead of feeding the cow a little hay or something, some grass or something, he wanted to make it fat all of a sudden, okay? Just fatten it up. So what did he do? He gave it, you know, real thick cereal to eat. And what was the cow's reaction? The cow's reaction was that the Hoyisom Mivayathis Bo, she started to kick at him. Omar lo, so he said to it, he says, Migoram Leich Shetahim Mivayathis Bi, says, you know, what was the reason that you started to kick at me? Elo Karshin and Sheikh Haltich, it's because of this rich food that I gave you to eat. So likewise, because the Danish Alem gave rich food to the people of Israel, they gave them gold and silver and everything else, this is the reason why they started in to kick against
rebel,
him,
right.
To rebel against him. Omar Rabbi Chiya Barabo, he gives another marshal the same idea. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, he said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, he says, Marshal Yodam Echod, Shehoyelo Ben. It's like the story of a man who had a son. Yerchitzo, he bathed him, Besocho, and he anointed him with, you know, fine oils. Remember, in those days, they didn't have palm olive soap. What did they use instead?
They used oils,
okay? So they used oils, so he bathed him, and then he anointed him with olive oil. And then after that, Echilo, he fed him well, the Ishkoho, and he gave him plenty to drink. And not only that, but Betololoi Kisal Tzavaroz. And he also hung a purse on his neck. In other words, he gave him a purse filled with gelt, and he hung it around his neck so he'd be able to draw upon it. And then what did this fine Tata do? It says, V'hoshivoy al Pesach shel zoynes. And he then brought him to sit by the door of a whorehouse. Zoynes, you know, prostitutes. Right, yeah.
Zoynes are prostitutes.
So my yaser is a haben shel yechtor. So, what could the son do not to sin? In other words, you created all the circumstances for sin. You pampered him. You gave him everything that he wanted. You gave him all the money that he wanted and everything else. And you even showed him how to dissipate this money in an immoral way. Omer Rabacho Berei de Rav Huna. So Rabacho said, the son of Rav Huna, he said, Omer Reshesis, the name of Rav Shesis, said, Hainu de Amri Yinshe. This is what people say. He says, Mole Kreise Zane Bishe. Which means, Mole Kreise, if your belly is full, then Zane Bishe, that's a bad business. In other words, if you have too much to eat, then it's not good for you. The result is that you get into troubles. Shenemar, we have a pasuk. Yes.
Could you literally translate those two words, zane?
Zane, okay. Zane in Aramaic means kinds. Zan, kind, species, and so on, okay? Bish in Aramaic means evil, bad. Okay?
So it gets a different kind.
So
of
in
evil.
Other words, right, male krese, if your stomach is full, then in that case, zanei bishei. The result is that you turn out to be a bad sort. Shene'emar, we have a pasuk over here. It's a pasuk that comes from Hosea. He says, Kemari sam, when they ate well, literally when they, you know, they fed, you know, it's like an animal, okay? An animal eats. So this we call, you know, who is the person who does it? He is the roeh. So kemari sam, this is the action. When they were eating well, right? By his bow, and they were full, they were sated. So they became full, by yorum libom, and their hearts became exalted. In other words, what happened was that they felt that they were too good already for the Rabbeinu Shalalem. You know, they felt that they were self-made men, as it says, for example, in Parsha Akev. It's written over there. Again? Right, you will say in your heart, Kaychi, Eitzim Yodi, says, my strength and the power of my hand also is a chayalazeh. This is what got me. In other words, I'm a self-made man, and I got ahead. I was able to do it simply by my brains.
Without the help of the
Rebbe. Right, without the help of the Rebbe. Yeah. So, he says then, Kemari Soma Yisbo, Soma Vayob Libon, and the rest of the Pasuk in Hosea is Alkein Shechoni, and this is the reason why they have forgotten me. Rab Nachman Omar Mehocho, Rab Nachman said, I have another Pasuk for you. It says it's written, Rom Levobecho, that your heart becomes exalted, and what happens? Mishrachach Lissad Hashem. This is, of course, is also Pasha Eken, okay? That you forget God. In other words, when things go too good with you, then this is the time that you forget about the Rabbeinu Shalom. Rabbanan Amrei, and most of the rabbis cited the quote Mehocha from this pasuk. It's written, the Ochal, the Sova, the Doshen, Ufona. It's written in Parsha Hazino, rather it's Vayelach, yeah, Parsha Vayelach. Okay, it's written over there just before Hazino. He says that the people of Israel, they will eat, they will be satisfied, they will grow fat, and what is going to happen? Then they will turn to other gods. Vazabuni, they'll, you know, they'll desert me, and so on and so on. This is what's written over there. So in other words, as we see, prosperity for the Jewish people is not always a blessing. That prosperity, very often, is the reason why Jews forget that there is a Rabbeinu Shalom in the world.
True.
The Yiboy Seymo, and if you wish, you can take from this pasuk. This is from Hazin. It's written, Yiboy Seymo, Mehocha, it's from this pasuk. What is it? It's by Yishman, Yeshurim, by Yiboy. It's written, you know, that Yeshurim, meaning the people of Israel, it's another name for the Jewish people, it got fat and it began kicking. In other words, it rebelled against the Rabbeinu Shalom. Omer Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeini, Omer Rabbi Yonason, Nayin Shechos HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'Hodeloi L'Moshe. He said, how do we know that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu then said, Moshe Rabbeinu, you're absolutely right.
True.
Yeah. Shenemar, because it is written, V'Kesef Yibesi Lohem B'Zohar, this happens to be a pasuk again in Hosea. It's written that I have made, but you know, the Rabbeinu Shalom is saying, yes, I have increased unto them silver and gold, and what did they do? Osu labuam. They used it in order to make, you know, they dedicated it instead to Baal. All right, so since we started with Moshe Rabbeinu complaining to the Rabbeinu Shalom, you know, that you shouldn't blame the people of Israel completely about what has happened with the Egel HaZahav. So now we continue with the a discussion of this particular incident in our Torah. By Daber Hashem el Moshe, the Rabbeinu Shalom said unto Moshe, Lech Reid, he said to him, go down. Now, first of all, the question is, why does he have to say go? And then the next word is go down. So he explains, my lech reid, what is the meaning of this expression lech reid? Omer Rabbi Elazar, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe. So Rabbi Elazar says, and Rabbeinu Shel Olam said unto Moshe, he says, Moshe, raid Migdula Sfar. Moshe, you have to go down from your Gedula. In other words, you're a great man, but now is the time to leave that all behind you. Go down from it. You know why? Because Klum Nasati L'chol Gedula Ela Bishvil Yisrael. Did I make you great? Except for one reason. For the people of Israel, for the sake of Israel. That's why I made you a great person. V'yachshav Yisrael Chotu. And now that Israel has sinned, Atol Omoli, what do I need you for? V'yad Toshas Koichai Shal Moshe. So immediately, Moshe's strength became weak. V'lo ha'yolo koyach l'daber. And he had no koyach to speak to Reuven Yishalim. But then, you know what, to Reuven Yishalim? Reuven Yishalim didn't stop the conversation at this point. Instead, the Kevan Shomar, but as soon as the Reuven Yishalim said, Heref mimeni v'yashmide, let go of me so that I may destroy them. Omar Moshe, so Moshe said, ah, dovozeh tolui bi. Now I see that this is going to depend upon me, whether Rabbeinu Shel Olam is going to destroy the people of Israel or not. So miyad omad, so as a result, he immediately stood up, finished hazek, and he became strong. In what? Bitfilo? In prayer. In other words, he prayed mightily unto the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, uvikesh rachamim, and he begged for mercy from the Rabbeinu Shel Olam for the people of Israel. And again, Moshel HaMelech. This is like the story of a king, Shekoas, who became angry, Albino. He became angry with his son. And he started in to give him a big beating, a terrible beating. And a friend of the king's was there sitting with him. And he was afraid to say anything to the king, you know, to correct him. In fact, that he's giving his son an awful whipping. Omer HaMelech, and the king said to him, you know, if it weren't for the fact that this friend of mine is sitting right in my presence, I would kill you. That's what he says to the son. So Omar, so what did this friend say? Omar, dovar zeh talui bi. I see that this depends upon me. So miyad omad behitzila. So he immediately rose up and he saved him, he rescued him. So we can yes.
Sir, I have a question.
David,
on the young boy whose father spoke,
right.
Is this a particular person who?
No, it's a marshal. It's a marshal.
Okay.
But, what is the nimshal? In other words, what is he comparing it to? The answer is the people of Israel were spoiled by the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, with the result that, they were tempted to do evil because they had already been spoiled. See. He was too good to them. And they rebelled against all the goodness.
Kind of sets up off as
the znut. Yeah. Well, the znut over here, I mean, an average person, let's say, the king, he has a son. We're not talking about a Jewish king necessarily, right? But what is it? He wants to teach his son the facts of life, okay? So what does he do? He sends him to a whorehouse, okay? I hate to say, I've read stories about Jewish fathers who did the same thing, that their son became bar mitzvah. I'm not talking about Orthodox fathers,
No. But
I've read about non-Orthodox fathers who had a great big party, celebrating the bar mitzvah, and then they said, okay, today you are a man, so tonight I'm going to initiate you in what it means, to be a man. It's a terrible business. All right, so again, we go back to Moshe and the Rabbeinu Shel Olam and the incident of the golden calf. And, of course, they are now having a discussion with each other, right? The Rabbeinu Shel Olam says to Moshe, he says, V'yato, now he says, Tanicholi, let me alone, V'yichar api bohem v'achale, and let my anger flare against them, and I will destroy them. But I will make of you, in other words, the Moshe Rabbeinu, I'll make you into a great nation. This is the situation, right? Rabbeinu Shel Olam says, since they sinned with the golden calf, I will destroy them as the punishment for doing it. But I will make you, Moshe Rabbeinu, into a great nation. So Amar Rabbi Abohu, Rabbi Abohu said, Yomole Nikro Kosev Bo, if it were not for the fact that we have a verse which is actually written to this extent, which says this specifically, Yevsholi Omro, it would be impossible to say anything like this. Why? Because Melame, this verse implies Shetopsu Moshe LaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Moshe Rabbeinu sees the Rabbeinu Shalom Ke'odem Shu Tofes Eschave Ro Bevigdo, just as a human being can seize his friend by holding on to his garment. The Yomar Lefonov, and he said unto him, Rabbeinu Shalom Ein Ani Manichacho, I'm not going to let you go. Because, what did the Rabbeinu Shalom said? He said, Yato Hanichali, right? Let me go. So, what does Moshe say to him? He says, Ein Ani Manichacho, I'm not going to let you go. Ad Shetimchol V'sislach Lahem, until you forgive and pardon them. Okay, now the Rabbeinu Shalom, as we said a moment ago, said to Moshe that if he were to destroy the people of Israel, nevertheless, Yeseu Eschologo Gadol, I'll make you into a great nation, right? Omer Rabbi Elazar, Moshe Tnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Rabbi Elazar said that this is what Moshe Rabbeinu said to the Kadosh Baruch Hu. He said to him, Rabbeinu Shalom, he says, Mark, he says, Shel Sholish Regalim, or Raglayim, actually, is better. Shel Sholish Raglayim, Eino Yochol Labe Lefonecha B'Shas Kascho. Just as a chair which has three legs, let's say a stool, alright, which has three legs, cannot stand up before you in the moment of your anger. Kisei Shel Regal Echod Alachas Kama V'Chama. How could a stool which has only one leg stand up before you? Needless to say, what are the three stools that he's the three legs that he's talking about? He's talking about Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. In other words, if what we call Zechus Ovois, in other words, the merit of our ancestors, the merits of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, if they were not enough, to secure for the Rabbeinu Shel Olam Mechila, forgiveness and pardon for the sin, how could I, who am only one human being, like a stool with only one leg, how would I ever be able to stand up? V'loyod, and not only that, he says, Elo sheyesh bi boshes ponim miyavoksai, says, also I am ashamed, how could I ever face my ancestors? If what? If I were to leave the people of Israel in the lurch right now. Achshav ro'myu, you know what they'll say. Right now they will say, Re'u parnos shehemid alehem, look what kind of a leader the Rebbeinu Shel Olam placed upon them. Bikesh gedula li'atzmai, v'lo bikesh alehem rachamim. He sought only gedula, greatness for himself, but he did not beg for mercy for them. How could I ever face Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov with such a thing? So then it's written by Echal Moshe's Bnei Hashem, which means literally Moses beseeched the presence of God. But the word Vayechal is an unusual word over here. Alright? Omer Rabbi Elazar, so Rabbi Elazar said, what does it mean the word Vayechal? He says, Milamed, it teaches us, She'omad Moshe B'tfilah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Moshe Rabbeinu stood in prayer before the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ad Shehechelehu, until he, Rashi gives you a French word over there. You see, Sheikh Alehu, he said, says, Hifchibo. In other words, he kept on begging him and begging him and begging him, imploring him, until what? Until he succeeded in bothering the Rabbeinu Shalom. This is how Rashi explains it, because you take a look at the French word over there, it says, ennuyer, the last. Which is, the French word of saying annoy, literally, ennuyer. In English we speak about ennui, E-N-N-U-E, and so on. Rashi was a Frenchman. What am I going to do? So once in a while he puts in French that even I can understand. So other times I don't understand his French. Because he spoke French, 1,000 years ago. Language changed a little bit in 1,000 years. But this is how he understands. This I can understand what he's saying. He's saying that, he bugged him and bugged him and bugged him until such a point that the Rabbeinu Shalalem said, okay. So this is one interpretation then, what is the meaning of the word Vayechal Moshe? The Rava Omar, he gave a different interpretation to Vayechal. He says this means Ashehefer lo Nidro. He prayed unto the Rabbeinu Shalalem so much until the point that the Rabbeinu Shalalem he gave absolution to the nether that he had made. All right. Now this is what we're reading about in the Torah this week. You know, Parsha Matos starts, the first chapter is that deals with Nedor. What is a Nedor? Nedor is you take a vow upon yourself. Now of course, so happens that this particular chapter deals in general with what we would call Nedorim, where it's you accept upon yourself some sort of that you deny yourself something. Okay? There are other Nedorim that a person can take which have nothing to do with this. But the Nedor that we're talking about, of course, another, and there's also other Nedorim in the Torah where they speak that refers altogether to sacrifice, and that's not the Nedor that they're talking about over here. Okay? But the idea of a Nedor is as follows. When you make a neder, then it's written lo yachel devaro. You're not allowed to make your word into chulin. In other words, you're not allowed to profane your word. You have to keep your word, right? All right. Nevertheless, we know that sometimes people make a neder and they don't realize the implication of the neder. Okay. So in the Torah, first of all, this week's sedra, they speak about two cases. They speak about the woman. Okay, woman in her childhood, in which case, of course, the father can be matir the neder if he hears, let's say, a 10-year-old girl or something like that makes a neder that she's going to abstain from this and this. The father can say to her, "I don't want you to observe this neder," and that's it. Yeah. Or if a woman is married, then the Baal, the husband, has the right also. If he hears his wife make a neder that he feels is going to be injurious either to her or to him, or destroy marital life or whatever it may be, understand? Then in that particular case he can say, "I forbid you, you know, to do it," and that is what you know, that's how he can adopt. This is what is mentioned there. But there's a whole Gemara. Yes.
If he does it at once.
Yeah, right. It has to be at once, right? He can't wait until a week later or even 24 hours later and tell him. Exactly, right. It has to be when he hears it. The Yom Shomo, the day that he hears it, this is when he has to do it. If he doesn't act immediately, then the neder will be enforced. Okay.
What if he doesn't hear it?
Huh?
What if he doesn't hear it and he finds out about it?
Oh, well, when he finds out, I mean, he has the right. Yeah, then he can itself. All right. But there's a Gemara in the Dorm which deals with the basic concepts of, you know, all kinds in the Dorm, and there we learn that there's also another authority who can be mater and neder, as we say, and that is either the Bezdin or a Rav who is a Mufak.
Who's a what?
A Mumche, a Mufak, in other words, a Rav who is a specialist, okay? That you can come to him and he'll examine, find out your motivations, the circumstances, etc., etc., and if in his judgment he feels that the neder can be set aside, then in that case he is what we call matir neder. In other words, he excuses you from having to fulfill this neder. You know that we have also a ceremony that we have either of Rosh Hashanah or of Yom Kippur, where we call it, you know, Hatoras Nedarim. We sit three people as a Bezdin, and you go and you say, you know, "I made all kinds of Nedarim that I hope to be able to fulfill. Let's say I made a neder that I would study Torah every day, and I wasn't able to do it, or that I would give so and so much charity, and so in other words, I had all kinds of good intentions, but I wasn't able to fulfill it." Yeah,
usually done Erev.
Either Erev Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur. Yeah, those are the favorite times for doing it. Okay, so then they are matir the neder. So what he's saying over here then is that the Rabbeinu Shalalem too, at this particular point, is matir the neder that he made, that he would destroy the people of Israel, and he sets it aside because of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, what is the connection with Vayechal Moshe? This is what the question is over here. Okay? So, this is what the connection is. All right, let me review this last part. By Echal Moshe, right? That's B'nai Hashem, Omer Elozim, right? Yeah, all right. But Rav Omar, he said, Asha Hefele Nidro. And the note on the side says, Asha Hitelo, okay? Siv Hocha, it's written over here by Echal, right? In other words, about Moshe. Uksiv Hocha, and what does it say in this week's Sedra? That we'll be reading, it says, Lo Yachel Devorah, right? He shall not profane his word. But the very fact that Yachil is used in connection with the nether means then that there's a connection between Yachil and Vayechal. As you can see, three of the letters are the same, right?
Right.
The Yom Amar, and one of the rabbis said, Hu Einoi Meichel, that, you know, the person who makes the nether, he cannot be Meichel his own nether, right? Avol Acherim Machalin Lo, but others can be Meichel the nether for him. Okay, so that we see then, actually, the picture over here that we have from Rava is actually who is being mater the neder. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam, he says, cannot be mater his own neder, but who is doing it? Vayechal Moshe means that Moshe himself was mater the neder that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam had made that he would destroy the people of Israel, and he told the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, you don't have to go ahead with it. I released you from the vow, and
okay.
I'll review the first little inyan that at the beginning of this business, which was what we discussed at the end of last week.
Right.
Because, as we'll see, there are several different interpretations. All right. As we see over here...
When you say inyan, you mean...
Inyan means matter.
Matter.
Subject.
Subject.
Yeah, right. Good old Hebrew word. Okay.
Could you, excuse me, Dr. Miller.
Sure.
I don't know how much time, but could you explain just one word?
Of course.
Inyan. What does a sugya or sugya mean?
Okay.
Exactly?
A sugya means a... particular section dealing with, you know, a subject, okay? So that, for example, you could say that over here the sugya consists of a discussion of the business about Moshe Rabbeinu and the relevance, you know, of the discussion between him and the Rabbeinu Shel Olam concerning the forgiveness of the people of Israel after the sin of the golden calf. This is the sugya. Then they go on to a different sugya. In other words, they go on to a discussion of something else, which is different from this. So that this is what we mean by sugya. All right. So to use
the topic.
Me? Yeah. Right. So that when we talk about a sugya, it means usually that, you know, it's what the discussion centers around, the subject of that particular discussion. And then after that, you know, you go into a different subject, discuss something else. So this is what the term means. Yeah.
But it's not as well. I mean, can people differ on what constitutes a sugya based on thinking that maybe the subject matter ends here or it doesn't end here?
I suppose there's always room for development.
I mean, it's not like, you know,
yeah,
for example, that the parrot starts here and ends there, and the, you know, I mean, that's...
Yeah, that's correct. But the sugya itself, as I say, that means a subject... a particular subject which is being discussed within whatever, you know, how many lines, how many pages, whatever it may be. I mean, some sugyas can go on for several pages. You may be discussing, I don't know what, let's say, marriage of women or something like that, and they deal with, you know, what are the particular things, you know, that are required, or whatever it may be. So then you can have a sugya that goes on for several pages. Good evening, Larry. Halavai it were. But the Vada's meeting down around the corner in the library. If you get bored, come in over here. Okay.
Lamed Bay.
We're on Lamed Bay.
Lamed Aleph.
Lamed Aleph. And we're in the middle of the page, halfway down. All right. We know that when it comes to a Tanis Sibor, you know, to a public fast day, what we read in the Torah, the answer is we read by Echal. We read it both to Shacharis and to Mincha. On Tisha B'Av, there's only one exception. We have a special reading for Shacharis,
of Tisha B'Av, just we have a special Haftorah in Shacharis, which we normally don't do on a fast day, okay? But the Mincha, the reading is always Vayechal, and of course there's always the Haftorah that we read on the fast day, which comes from the work of Yeshayah. So we begin reading and we say Vayechal Moshe Esbenei Ad Hashem, okay? Now, the English translation probably runs something along these things, along these lines. It says Moshe beseeched the presence of God, okay, or he supplicated the presence of God. It's something like that, okay. In other words, he begged something. But the point is that the word Vayechal is not too common a verb, although we do find it in some of the other forms. The chalot penei so-and-so means, you know, also to beseech somebody to ask for a favor and so on. I mean, this is the idea, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, because, however, it is considered, you know, a more unusual expression than something like vayivakesh or vayishal or something like that, you know, which would mean to ask or to beg for something, whatever it may be. So, therefore, we find that there are now different ideas as to what is the meaning of the word Vayechal. Now, of course, when I say what is the meaning, I mean what would be the Midrashic meaning. In other words, what lesson can we derive particularly from the use of this expression? All right?
This is where you're at? Vayechal.
Yeah, Vayechal Moshe Espenei Ad Hashem. All right?
The word Penei.
Now, Penei means literally the face or the presence.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
So he actually commanded God's presence.
Yes,
you might say.
Right. But as I say, the expression, I mean, you know, it's a sort of a poetic expression.
Mm-hmm.
But what does the expression mean in plain English? It means to beg. To beg for something. Okay? So he begged God. What did he beg him for? So Omer Rabbi Elazar, interpretation number one was, Malamed Shamad Moshe B'tfilot Ne'akodesh Baruch Hu, teaches us this word Vayechal that Moshe stood in prayer before the Rabbeinu Shel Olam Ad Shehechelehu, until he hechelehu. Now the only problem is, what does hechelehu mean? So I told you last week that, thank God, I understand once in a while some of Rashi's expressions.
Because you know French.
And Rashi says over there, hechelehu says hifzirbo. In other words, he kept on nudging him, he kept on begging him and begging him, and then he gives the French word ennuyé over there, which means to annoy,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, to pester. So, okay. So Vayechal, he says, this shows that the Moshe wouldn't take no for an answer, but instead, what did he do? He kept on pestering him and begging him and begging him. So this is one explanation of what it means. And nobody questions that. However, I did see a different interpretation, that is a different reading. There are other texts, as you know, and there the reading is not Achechelehu, but rather there I saw that the reading is Achechola. What is Achechola? Achechola means until Moshe himself became sick, because he put in so much work in begging the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, you know, to forgive the people of Israel, that he became ill as a result of the intensive nature of his prayer before God. Good evening, God. How are you? Good. Barava? All right, so that was interpretation number one. Now comes interpretation number two. The marginal note, as you see to the left of it, says, Ulai Terech Lema Barav. In other words, maybe it wasn't Rava, but maybe it was Rav. All right, well, this is for some, you know, this is for the scholars, you know, to mull over.
Yeah, right.
Who put in that particular marginal note?
Okay. The marginal notes, by and large, were put in by various scholars. Of course, this goes back quite a bit, but nevertheless, there are also some more modern marginal notes that you'll find, okay? Essentially, one of the biggest persons, you know, who worked on trying to establish a correct text was the Rashal, like Shlomo Luria. And very often you'll find a little note that says Rashal Mashmit Etzer, for example. Rashal deletes this particular word because he feels that it doesn't belong in the context of what the suge is.
Right.
Okay.
So he is one of those. But there are others also who made their comments. Sometimes they put it on the left, sometimes they put it on the right, as you can see. Okay? Alright, so anyway, whether it's Rav or Rav, but the point is, let's see what his interpretation is.
Some of them are just references, though. They tell you where it is.
Yes, yes.
The pasuk came
this
from
is
from
correct,
where.
Correct. If you take a look over
it's
here,
Devarim.
Right, over here, and over here, you'll find that sometimes they'll tell you that either it comes from, let's say, someplace else in the Gemara or in Tosefta, whatever it may be, right. And they'll give you the reference. Like, for example, on the top, as you go down, it says Sukkah Nun Beis, Ayin Shom. Sukkah, you know, page, you know, Daf Nun Beis, Ahmed Beis, that's what the two dots there mean. And then Ayin Shin, that means Ayin Shom. Look back over there and see what it has to say. And then the next note, as you see, is from Gemara Megillah Chavdalet.
Yeah.
So, okay? All right. Sometimes he puts it on the right, sometimes he puts it on the left. And sometimes it may be a reference, you know, to what is the source of the pasuk as we find quoted. Okay? So, for example, by Chal Moshe and so on, so you see the note on the right in this particular case. It says Shmo Slamet Beis. And then as they continue, quoting from the same area, the next place it says Shom. What does Shom mean?
Name?
No,
no.
Shom
James
means
James
over there. In other words, the same place you'll find the next person. Same, you know,
James
book,
James, right.
In the same book and in the same chapter. Okay? So that's what Shom means. The English word is Ibid.
Ibid.
If you've ever seen Ibid around.
Right.
Really Latin for Ibidem, which means the same place.
I thought Ibid was an animal.
How about the opposite? What's that word?
The what?
O-P.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
C-I-T, what's that one?
That's Latin for opus citato, which means
the
work which has been cited before. Right. Okay, getting back. So what did he, how did he interpret the word Vayachal Moshe? So he says, Ad Sheheper Lo Nidro, says Moshe begged Rabbeinu Shel Olam until such a point that he was matir his debtor. Okay? But because, you see, the word is Hefer.
Could you go that into English again?
Which means that he annulled the vow that had been taken. Okay? Mm-hmm. I explained last week, and this was the last remark that I made at that time. First of all, the marginal note says Shehiter, which means also the same thing. He released them from it. Okay? And I explained, if you remember last week, that, for example, the word Mayfair actually is in reference in the Torah to the power of a husband or of a father, you know, to annul a woman's vow. But there are other reasons for annulling vow, I mean, and who else has the power to annul a vow? Because the answer is the Rav or the Bezdin, okay?
Yeah.
But in reference with that, normally we don't use the expression so much haporas nedarim, which really refers to what the biblical use is, but rather hatoras nedarim, okay? And this is why, as I said, before Rosh Hashanah or before Yom Kippur, you have the ceremony of Hatoras Nedarim, wherein you ask to be released of any vows that you are unable to fulfill. Naturally, what kind of vows are we talking upon?
Vows to God.
Yeah, vows to God, exactly. You promised that you would study a Blat Gemara every day and you didn't get around to it, right? You promised that you would
That's
fulfill
true.
Them every day, okay?
We
you
don't.
Promised that you would give a lot of tzedakah every day, or whatever it may be, okay? So these are vows that you made to Rabbeinu Shel Olam, and we all know, I mean, we start off with the greatest intentions of the world, right? And sometimes it doesn't work. Matter of fact, David HaMelech said, Nishpati v'akayemo, he says, I have sworn that I will fulfill the words of, you know, the Torah, okay? So if David HaMelech felt that he had to bind himself with a vow in order to fulfill the words of the Torah, so we... human beings who are not on the same spiritual level of David HaMelech, so sometimes we take, you know, a vow in order to try to strengthen our resolve to do something, but we fail to fulfill it.
So this is what the HaTorah is the Doron. Okay? And there are also other reasons, I mean, why a person would come to the Rav in order to be Matur and Neder. Alright. Now, the idea over here, the statement of Rav or Rav, whoever it is that Moshe Rabbeinu begged and begged the Rabbeinu Shel Olam until the point where he was Matur, in other words, he gave release from the vow to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. Now, how do I know it means that and not the other way around? Because this is what the Gemara has to say right now, okay? What does he say? It says, okay, Siv Hocha, here, in other words, the pasuk that we're discussing, it's written Vayechal, right? Bob Yud Ches Lam, Siv Hasim, and then we have another pasuk where it says, Lo Yachel Devorah. This is what we read in the Torah this past the Shabbos and Parsha and Matos. That if you give, you say, you know, you make a pledge, Ish Ki Yido Neder Lad Hashem, person who makes a vow to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, Lo Yachel Devorah. He should not literally profane his word. Okay? So, Lo Yachel Devorah. So we see that Yachel looks a lot like Vayechal. Okay? V'yom Amar, and a scholar said, Hu Eino Mechel. He cannot absolve his own vow. Avol Acherim Mechalin Lo. But others can absolve the vow for him. Okay? So in other words, if you make a vow, you have to stick to it.
You can't absolve it yourself.
You cannot, right. You cannot decide by yourself to, you know, that you don't have to keep
it. Is that where the word Finder Mechel, the Yiddish word, comes from?
Well, not exactly. Although, I mean, there possibly is some sort of a connection. Because this Yachel, in the original text in the Torah, the word Yachel comes from the root Ches Lamed Lamed. Okay? And that we'll see in the next interpretation what that means. The word itself, Ches Lamed Lamed, is Chalel. Chalel means to be Mechalel something. In other words, you profane it. Lo Yachel Devaro means literally don't profane your word. You make a vow, you make a pledge, stick to it, keep your word, okay? Don't profane it. This is really what it means. So that the root there is Ches Lamed Lamed. Moichel is from the root Mem Ches Lamed. Now there are those people, you know, many commentators who feel that even if you have two letters that look alike, there's already a connection between the idea in one word and the idea in the other. And this is true, first of all, as far as many of the midrashim, many of the drushes that they make, you know, and the interpretations of the pasuk. But it's also true, for example, a person like Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch, great commentator, you know, back about a little over 100 years ago or so, when he was the Rav in Frankfurt, and among other things, he wrote a commentary to the Chumash, commentary to the Torah, as well as many other works. And he very often relies upon the fact that even two letters can be interpreted right, that there is a connection between root here and that root there.
Okay.
Yeah. So, as we see then from the point of view of Halacha, we cannot be matir our own neder. We have to come to somebody else in order to be matir. All right. Now, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam also made a neder. What did he say? He said, I'm going to destroy the people of Israel. Right? So, Moshe keeps on begging him and persuading him and pestering him until such a point that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam says, okay, be Moichel, my neder. Be matir, my neder. Okay? So, that's another interpretation. To make clear, just this last business that I'm talking about, HaTorah Sedor, okay? If you come to a Rav and you say, I want you to be Matir my neder. In other words, I want you to absolve me from my
obligation.
Yeah, you know, my obligation, the vow that I took to fulfill. Okay. He doesn't automatically say, okay, I've been the mechel. He doesn't immediately say mutalacho, 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 which is the formula, so to speak, okay? To say to yourself, no. He has to ask you questions. He has to find out, why did you make the vow? At the time that you made the vow, did you understand the implications of your vow? And then if he sees that the person did not understand what the implications of the vow were, so then he has the authority to be mater. But if a person took a vow and he was fully cognizant of what he was doing, it's not easy to get absolution of the vow. You have to look for other circumstances. So it's not an automatic process. So the same thing, we have to understand that Moshe Rabbeinu is asking the Rabbeinu Shalom, why did you take such an oath? Would you have taken an oath under the following circumstances? And this is what we have over here. We see that Moshe Rabbeinu speaks to the Rabbeinu Shalom in order to absolve him from this vow that he has taken to destroy the people of Israel. So this was the second interpretation of Vayechal. Okay? Let's continue. Ushmuel Amar, I have to explain to you why the marginal notes say maybe it was Rav and not Rava, because usually in the Gemara when there's an argument between Rav and Shmuel, these are these two are constantly fighting with each other. I don't mean that we really came to blows, but you know they always have different
opinions.
Right, they have differences of opinion. So that's the reason why the marginal note over there read for Rav. Perhaps, you know, it says Ulai. Maybe. Okay?
Maybe.
Alright. Ushmuel Omar. What does Shmuel say? It says, Melamed Shemosa Asma in the Misa they have. This verb, Vayechal, teaches us that Moshe Rabbeinu was ready to sacrifice his life for them. He is ready to face death on behalf of the people of Israel. Shenemar, even as it's written, the Ayin. In other words, Moshe says to Rabbeinu Shalom, if you do not forgive, then Nacheni no misifrecha, then wipe me out from your book. In other words, I don't want to be alive if you don't forgive the people.
That's a quote
of
from the Torah.
Right, right. Okay. Now, the question is, how do we say that, you know, is there a connection between Vayechal, the verb itself, and the idea that Moshe was ready to sacrifice his life? So one interpretation that I've seen is the fact that Vayechal, remember I said before that Vayechal probably comes from the root Ches Lamed Lamed. Okay? And that root has various meanings, depending, of course, always upon the context in which it is to be found. We gave it before in the sense of chalil, to profane. So that lo yachil devorah means do not profane your work. Then of course we had other interpretations. Alright, now getting back to ches lamed lamed, another meaning of this word is chalol, so the root. And what is chalol? Chalol is somebody who is killed. Who is killed? So, in other words, Vayechal Moshe means that Moshe Rabbeinu said to Rabbeinu Shalom, I am ready to be killed if you do not fulfill my request to forgive the people of Israel. Rabbanan Amrei? Excuse me. Alright, now the next one. Omar Rabba, maybe over here, this is correct. Since before we maybe we're not on okay, but on the side on the left there's another name given instead. Take a look, you see it says Rabbi Yitzchak Omar Melami. So we're not 100% sure, you know, who is the one to quote at this particular point, but whether it's Rova, whether it's Rabbi Yitzchak, whatever it's, alright, at any rate, what did the Rabbi Yitzchak say?
Malamed shehechelo aleihem midas rachamim. It teaches us that he caused the midas rachamim, in other words, God's quality of mercy, God's attribute of mercy, to be what? Blank upon them. Now the question is, what does shehechelo mean? So according to Rashi, if we'll take a look over there, we'll see that the hechelo he understands in the sense of yochul olai. What is yochul olai? Yochul olai means may it happen unto me, or may it occur to me. So in other words, what Moshe Rabbeinu did was to cause God's attribute of mercy to descend upon the people of Israel and to protect them from the threat of annihilation. Rabbanan Amre, and now comes a fifth interpretation. The rabbis in general say that what does Vayechal Moshe mean? It says, Malame Shomer Moshe Pnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This teaches us that Moshe Rabbeinu said to the Kodesh Baruch Hu, he said to him, Rabbeinu Shalom, he says, Chulin Hu Lekom Yasos Kadavu Hazeh. Chulin in this case means that it's unworthy of you. It's unworthy. Literally, it's profane, right? But it's unworthy of you that you should do something like this. In other words, to destroy the people of Israel. And another interpretation. Vayechal Moshe b'nei Hashem, Tanya Rabbi Eliezer HaGodol Omer. This is now an interpretation of Rabbi Eliezer. Malame Shomad Moshe b'tfilo, b'nei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says this teaches us that Moshe Rabbeinu stood in prayer before the Rabbeinu Shalom for so long until Achilo got hold of him. So now the question is, what's this Achilo? So to this the Gemara asks precisely that question, because why? Obviously, although there was a tradition given by Rabbi Eliezer, but the language had changed so that people, you know, later on in Babylonia did not know what is the meaning of the word achilo. Maybe in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Eliezer lived over there, so he knew what the word achilo meant, but they didn't know. So they asked the question, my achilo, what does achilo mean? So Rabbi Elozor, it's not Rabbi Eliezer, but Rabbi Elozor said, he says, Eishalatzomais. He says, this means a fire in the bones. In other words, an inflammation in the bones. My Eishalatzomais, what do you mean by a fire in the bones? Amar Abaye, Eshto de Garme, which is the Aramaic that the Babylonians were familiar with. You know, the Jews in Babylonia, they spoke Aramaic. Mm-hmm. It's their ordinary language, so they knew what an Eshto de Garme was. It was an inflammation in the bones. So apparently they needed a little explanation in their own language of what they meant by Achilo Eishalatzomus. Okay. Zecholi Avraham LeYitzchok Yisrael Avodecha. This is the continuation after, you know, Vayechal Moshe. It's the same passage over there. So Moshe says, remember for Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, your servants, Ashenishvata Lehem Boch, what you swore unto them, Boch. Now the question is, what does Boch mean? Boch means literally by yourself, but it's an unusual expression.
Well, of your own free will.
Yeah, okay, so that, anyway, they want to know, my Boch, what do you mean by Boch? What is it? What does it mean? So Amar Rabbi Elozor, Rabbi Elozor said, Amar Moshe b'nei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rebbeinu Shalom, said to him, Rebbeinu Shalom, il mole nishbato lehem b'shmayim ba'oretz. He says, you know, if you had sworn to them, I swear by heaven and earth, right? Then in that case, I would say, what? Well, Yisi Omer, I would say, Kishem Sheshemayim Boretz Betelim, just as heaven and earth can become nothing, Tach Shuatzcho Betelim. So likewise, your vow also could become nothing. But, the Achshav Kenishvato Lehem B'Shimcha Godol, but now that you have sworn to them by thine own great name, in other words, Boch, right? You swore unto them by yourself. In other words, you're putting your own name, you're putting your own reputation on the line, Rabbeinu Shalom, right? So in that particular case,
Mashimcha ha-godol chadakayim li'olam, just as your great name lives and endures forever, will olmei olamim and forever and ever, kach shuascho, so likewise the promise that you made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, right, that you would give this land unto them, this is also kayemes li'olam olmei olamim. Yes, your vow also, the oath that you gave unto them, will endure forever and ever. Vatadaber aleihem, and you said unto them, you know, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Arbe zarachem kecholfei hashamoyim, I will increase your seed even like the stars in heaven, vecholoot hazeis hasher malti, and as far as this land which I have said, so it says, hayasher marti. What is this language that we find over here in the Torah where it says, which I have said? Asher omarto miboyle. Shouldn't it say instead, which you have said? I mean, think, what is the pasuk?
It's Moshe talking to God.
Moshe is talking to Rabbeinu Shalom, right? Okay.
He's telling you
so,
about the vow.
Exactly. He is saying to them, you know, remember the vow that you have made unto them, and you told them, you know, that I will increase your seed even as the stars in heaven, and as far as this land, it should have said Asher Amarta, which, you know, you said that you would give unto them, right? So why does it say Asher Amarti, which I have said? So there are two explanations that we'll see that are now given. Omar Rabbi Elazar, so one explanation was given by Rabbi Elazar. He says, Ad kan divrei Talmid, the kandel divrei Arav. He says, the first part of the pasuk, let's go back to it again. Vatadaber aleihem, right? And you said unto them, Arbe zarachem kechokvei hashamayim, I will increase your seed even as
the stars
of the heaven. Okay? So up to this point, he says, this was the Talmud who was talking. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu. Mm. After all, he is the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's Talmud. Okay. But Mekan v'Eilech, but beginning, you know, the rest of this pasuk where it says "V'chol oretz hazeis asher amarti," this is divrei harav. This is what the Rabbeinu Shel Olam himself is saying. For Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani Yomar, he gave a different interpretation. He says, "Elu ve'elu divrei talmid." No, Moshe Rabbeinu said both of them. In other words, not just, you know, you have said unto them, "I will increase your seed," right, like the stars of the heaven, but he also said, and this land, all this land which I have said. So how come Moshe Rabbeinu says I have said? So the answer is Elokach amar Moshe lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is what Moshe said to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, and he said unto him, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, he says, Devorim she'amarto li leichem olehem liyisrael bishmi, holachti amarti lehem bishimcha, says